Welcome to the Story Night podcast, where you hear true stories on a theme, recorded live on stage and without notes. I'm your host, Jessica Holmes. At last month's show, we heard a devilishly good spook story from Nick Garcia. Sometimes, to get the full sense of the evening, you just have to make the live event. Nick gave his story to the audience that night, then to the ether, but politely declined the siren song of the podcast. So today, we bring you a brave, bold story Nick told at our very first show, Busted, stories about getting caught in the act. This story, about a wayward peeping Tom, is honest, powerful, and probably rated PG-13. Watch out for those little ears in the room, and enjoy this revealing peek.
Hi. It took a while for me to come to the conclusion that the story I'm about to tell you is the story I'm about to tell you. I had many other options, but this one is, I think, the most embarrassing. And it was the first, when I was asked to do this, it was the first story that popped into my mind. And I denied it, and no, I won't do that. And then I said today, I was like, well, these other stories suck, so I guess I'll just tell this one. So here goes. As a young kid, I remember having this very, being very aware, acutely aware of my own sexuality. And one of my earliest memories of this feeling was when I was very, very young. I was underwater in a heated pool up near Idaho City. And I was hugging my mother's leg. So, so I didn't quite, you know, the charge I felt was pretty intense, and it's a feeling that's been familiar throughout my life, throughout my adolescent life, and it was always in relation to the opposite sex. It was, you know, having a crush on, you know, girls at school, or, you know, looking at a pornographic magazine, or, you know, hearing the, you know, exploits of, you know, adults, sexual behavior, you know. Growing up, I didn't really talk to my parents about sex, and I had two younger sisters, and I certainly didn't talk to them about sex, and I didn't have an older brother to talk to me about sex, you know, who could, you know, tell me, you know, about his experiences, or, you know, how to do it, you know, and all that stuff. So stupid. Anyway, I had my friends, you know, and I had friends who literally knew as much as I knew about sex, which was nothing. And so it was all hearsay. And one of my friends, I remember him telling me a story. We were riding our bikes through Veterans Park, and I remember him one afternoon telling me about this bodybuilder he'd heard about who would hoist himself up on these dip bars and then beat his erection across a metal pole until he got off. And so it sounds odd to you, but I mean, as a child, that did sound odd to me, but it also sounded like, well, I'm not an adult, so I mean, I guess maybe that's what I will do as an adult. Maybe that's just what adults do. Maybe that's just normal sexual behavior for an adult. He also tried to explain to me what a blowjob was one time, and he said it was basically where, he said it's when a woman, and he used the example of a woman, it's when a woman licks a man's body entirely, licks the whole thing, and then blows on his body to dry him off. My other friend, my other childhood friend once told me, she tried to explain to me what a blowjob was, but it was more in the, like, a tradition of, like, a Zen master trying to instruct his novice pupil. She would try to get me to come to the conclusion as to what a blowjob was myself. She wouldn't just directly tell me, so she'd give me these graphic, like, koans, and she'd say, you know, it's like licking a pussy, but not really, you know. So, she also was the first vagina I ever saw, like the first real, you know, in real life, the first real vagina. I was at her house one afternoon, and she, I don't remember how we got to this point, but I remember distinctly. I was on my hands and knees. Her pants were pulled down. Her parents were gone, and her family was gone. And I remember like being on my hands and knees, like looking up at it, and being surprised. I guess what was weird was I wasn't expecting to see all the folds. I was totally weirded out by all the folds and stuff I saw going on up there. And so this was kind of like my sexual education. It wasn't like anything. I mean, I didn't know what conclusions to draw on these experiences. And you know, that was primarily, you know, the kind of stuff I heard about in grade school. It was stuff like stories like that. It was like, I'll show you mine if you show me yours, that kind of thing. And when junior high hit, that was a turning point. I wasn't, you know, getting out there and getting action or anything like that, but I was, it seemed like a lot more of my friends were actually becoming involved, like were actually, you know, becoming more sexually active. Yeah, doing it. I mean, not necessarily doing it. Their definition of doing it was like finger banging. That was junior high. I mean, that's horrible, but that's like that was the terminology I heard. You know, that was seriously what I would, that's what people talked about in junior high. And, but that was so far removed from anything I could ever imagine myself doing. That just the thought of doing like anything remotely sexual was freaked me out like to no end. And, but you know, this same person, this girl who I grew up with, she had become, you know, she was the daughter. There was four girls in their house. They were our next door neighbors, and she was the there was the youngest, then her, and then there was her older sister who was 2 years older than her, and then they had the oldest sister who I didn't really know very well. She wasn't really around, but you know, they were these young women now, and you know, you know, I had seen them, you know, in a certain way all my childhood, but now I was starting to see them a lot differently. You know, I was starting to feel really, you know, attracted to them. And, but, you know, I didn't know what to do with these feelings. I didn't know what the hell to do with these feelings. I remember hearing, you know, I remember borrowing someone's Playboy, and I would look at it, and I would just be staring at it, and, you know, I'd have this erection, but I just wouldn't know what to do, and I didn't know how to release, like, I didn't know what to do with these feelings. And I'd heard about jerking off, and I'd heard of, you know, masturbation, but to me, the term, like, jerking off sounded, like, painful. It sounded like the equivalent of, like, tug-of-war, like, you know, like, trying to start a lawnmower, you know, where you're yanking on it, and that didn't sound at all... That didn't sound at all like something that would feel good. So I didn't know what to do with what was going on. Well, one evening, I was in my backyard, and our backyards, they were right next to each other. We didn't have a fence dividing our property. And I remember seeing the bathroom light turn on in their house. And I knew the layout of the house, so I knew that was definitely the bathroom window. And, you know, I remember thinking, God, you know, if I'm quiet enough and I sneak over there, maybe if I could peek in through the little crack, you know, because I could see, like, where the shade was pulled down, there was still a little opening, you know, and you could still kind of, like, get a look inside if I wanted. So, I did. I snuck over, and I remember, the windows were high, and so I had to kind of get up on my tiptoes to see inside. So I remember I could see, you know, I could hear movement, and I could hear movement. I didn't see anything until I kind of got up on my tiptoes, and I could see kind of like flesh, you know. I could see someone was in there, and I could see that it was flesh. That's what I was seeing. And so you know, I strained my toes as hard as I could to just see anything, you know. And the toilet was right below the window. And I remember right as I peeked in, you know, and was able to look over, I noticed it was their dad. And he was, yeah, he was going number two. And it was at that moment that I felt like, this is bad. I'm looking in at this adult man. He's trying to go to the bath. It did not feel right at all. I felt really bad and really like, this has gone too far. Well, you would think something like that would have stopped me, but I don't know how many days later it was, but I was in the backyard again, and of course I was always eyeing that window, seeing when the light was going to come on, because I just had to see. I mean, I don't know, in my mind at that age, I was just going to go for broke. I'm going to do it. I'm going to get a look. I'm going to get a see. What is this? I want to see for real, you know, what a real woman looks like. I've seen the magazines, you know, I've heard the stories, but I really wanted to see, you know, what the big deal was. And so the light went on again, and, you know, I crept back over. But this time I was like, all right, what could I stand on? Because last time that was really hard to, you know, strain on my calves. So I'm looking around, and and I see like a 5-gallon like pickle bucket, you know, like just randomly, and they had junk in their backyard. And so I took this pickle bucket and I put it up against the house, and I stood up on this thing, and I'm peeking in, and it's this same person, this girl who I grew up with, and she's in the bathroom. And I see everything. I see her take her clothes off. I see her start up the tub. I see her take a bath. I watch the entire thing. And I am like, my mouth is as dry as it is right now. I mean, I'm just like, you know, I can't believe what I'm seeing. This is like the girl I grew up, you know, all my life. I've known her all my life. And she's this young woman, and she had little breasts, and, you know, and she had hair down there. I didn't have hair yet. It was totally like this. I felt like I was stepping into adulthood. And I can't say I felt good about this. I did. I felt really guilty. So she turns the water off. She towels off. She leaves. And I'm kind of just, oh, my God. I'm still standing up there. And I get off the bucket. And then the light goes on again. And I, no. Okay, so I get back on the bucket. It's the one who's 2 years older. And I'm like, oh, my God. All right, so 2-for-1 deal. So So I'm on the bucket, but the thing is the condensation was developing on, you know, getting on the window, so it was harder and harder to see inside. So I'm really straining, and I can see her, you know, doing the same routine. You know, she's getting ready, and my balance is get off, you know, and as I'm trying to like get a better angle through the fog, I'm looking for any amount of clear space on the window. Well, and my, you know, moving around, I guess the bucket was like hitting the side of the wall, the side of the house. And yeah. And the blind goes up. She lifts the blind and she's like, Nick, what are you doing? And my mind is scrambling. Look, how do I get out of this? And I said, I remember it really was, this is the truth, I said, it's sister's birthday today, right? And she said, yes. And I said, well, I was just gonna surprise her. I was just gonna scare her. I thought it was you. I thought it was her in there, and I'm really sorry. And she's like, that's not what you were doing. She knew, I mean, she knew, like, the truth of what was going on. So I am like, okay, so I get out of it. I didn't feel like I'd fully convinced her. So I left, and I felt horrible. And, you know, I felt like a fucking pervert, you know? I mean, I felt like a fucking pervert. And the next day at school, I'm at my locker, and this girl who I grew up with comes walking up, and she's like, you were watching me take a bath. You were watching us take baths last night. And I said, no. I said something the equivalent of, like, how dare you? You know, what do you mean? I wasn't doing that, you know, and the conversation wasn't long. She went on her way, and it was really, you know, it was really strained after that. And the girl whose locker was next to me, she was standing there the whole time. She's like, was that true, what she said? And I said, no, I was not true. I don't know what she's talking about. Well, okay, you at this point, you any rational, like, you know, intelligent person would have said, okay, enough, but not this dumb shit. So it must have been a few weeks later or something, and I got that feeling, you know, that insatiable fucking, I don't know what it is, but, you know, junior high, it's just raging through you. And it was like dusk. It was right before nightfall, and I could see the bathroom light go on again. So this time I went up. I didn't come directly from the backyard. I went like from my house to their house, like along the side. So I had to pass their parents' bedroom. Well, as soon as I walk in front of their parents' bedroom, I hear Nick, and it's their mother, and I said, and at the time in my English class, we'd been reading the book The Yearling, and the protagonist's name in the book, his name is Jody, and I said Jody, and she said. And I don't know why I yelled that out. I guess because I had just been reading it or something. And she says, "You're in big trouble. You're in big trouble." And she gets off the bed and she leaves the bedroom, and I'm standing there like, "Oh my God." And she didn't leave the bedroom. I tried to explain to her before she left. I said, our dog Roxy got out and I was trying to find her. She ran over here. Have you seen her? You know, she's like, "That's not true. I know what you were doing." And she leaves. So I go home and I tell my mother, I go, "Mom, they think I was like peeking in their windows and stuff like that. They're on to me. They think that I've done this thing." And I basically convinced her that I hadn't been doing what I was about to be accused of, and I knew we were going to get a call. And she believed me. She backed me. She said, "All right, well, you know, my parents didn't really get along with that family, the parents of that family very well anyway, so it wasn't that big of a stretch. But, you know, I was her son, and she wanted to believe me." So I called them to, you know, like, try to explain, you know, look, that wasn't what was going on. And their dad, who, you know, the dad answers, and I say, "Look, I wasn't doing what you guys thought I did." And he says, "No, Nick, you did this before, so we called the cops. They're coming over." And I said, I kind of got mad. I said, this isn't true. I don't know why would you do something like, you know?" So he hangs up on me, and I tell my mom, "Well, they call the cops." So we're waiting around. I'm just this feeling of dread. And the cop, I hear this knock on the door. A few minutes later, there's a knock. It's very, like, 10 minutes later. And I go to the door, and there's a police officer. And he says, "Are you Nick Garcia?" And I said, "Yes." And he says, "I want you to tell me everything that happened, and I don't want you giving me any crap." And he, like, crossed his arms, like, I'm not fucking around, okay?" And I told him the same lie. I said, "Look, I was looking for my dog. My dog went into their yard, and I couldn't find her, and that's all that happened." And he says, "Well, they said that you've done this before." And I said, "That's not true, you know." And I lied, you know, I lied to him. I said that none of this was true. And he says, "Well, they're going to press charges. They want to press charges." And I said, "Fine, whatever, you know, fine, I don't care, you know, whatever, you know, we'll fight this, whatever." You know, in so many words. And so he leaves. But I felt like at that point, man, this is just to deny this or to pretend like, you know, to try to pretend I was innocent. It was just, that was almost too much. So I said, "Mom, this is true. I have been doing this. I've done this more than once. I'm really sorry. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'll go over there and I'll confess. I'll tell them. I'll tell the truth." So I went over there, and the cop was in the living room. The whole family was in the living room, and, you know, it was a big family ordeal. And I remember knocking on the door, and this girl who I grew up with answered, and I said, "I'm here to. I want to talk to you guys." And so she let me in, and there was just this awful silence, you know, and I came in, and the only thing was the cops, you know, little dispatch radio going off and on every now and again. And I said, I basically told them, "Look, I'm really sorry. This is true. I have been doing this, and I feel horrible about it." And they, oddly enough, they were very forgiving. You know, I think, I don't know why, I was lucky, but they were very cool about it. And I don't remember much after that. I just remember entering the living room and telling them what had happened, that I had in fact been doing that. And I remember the cop, you know, talking with the dad a little bit, and okay, this is over. So he left, and then I left shortly after that. And it was strange, you know. It's still like I tell this story now, but it, even after all these years, it's something that it's still in me, you know. It's like the effect of your actions can go so long, you know. You think like by doing something that you don't realize like how far-reaching the effects of your actions can be, you know. It may not mean anything to them still, and I don't think it does. I'm still friends with them to this day, but to me, whenever I see them, I'm just all I can think about is just, hey, remember me? I was a pervert when I was little. Remember that? So we moved, actually, not because of this event, but my parents wanted to move to another house. And coincidentally, there was a totally hot, you know, girl who was living next door to us. And anyway, thanks a lot.
Speaking of poking your nose into places you probably shouldn't, we bring you story slammer Leo Hennessy from Spooked, Stories of the Uncanny, who explores dark caves to potentially explosive ends.
Well, my friends talked me into this. I do have quite a few adventures. First of all, I want to set the stage of this story. Basically, I'm from North Dakota. Sorry about that. That's one of those things I'm kind of embarrassed about. But I spent about my first 30 years there, and the place that this happened in is Medora, North Dakota. I don't know if you've ever driven I-94 and you come across North Dakota, and there's this big gap in the country that's the Badlands, it's called. And it's got these lines of earth and colors of reds and all kinds of, it's clay materials, and it's just a big gash where rivers cut into it. Well, I was a park ranger there years and years ago, and there's really not much to do as a park ranger. I was in a little campground 5 miles south of there, and you know, people would come and I would have to entertain them because like one person would come into the campground and I'd spend the whole day with them. Just, you know, that's about all I had to do. So, but my brother was at worked at a musical in the lighting program, or worked in the lights. And one day he comes to me, and there's a national park here called Theodore Roosevelt National Park. And it's a historical town where Theodore Roosevelt came years ago, and he basically became a man by hunting buffalo and doing all kinds of things. But basically, we were right next to the national park. So my brother comes to me one day. I was bored out in my little trailer out in the campground. He says, "Leo, I found something." My brother's name is Dell. And he says, "I turned a rock over, and I found a hole." Okay, you know, so we're used to, as kids, we always look for holes and things like that. So we go over to this place, and we climb up these ledges, and, you know, it's kind of clays, and rocks are falling, and he pulls back the rock, and there's this hole just big enough for us to crawl in. He says, "Oh, let's crawl in it." So we had these old headlamps, the first generation headlamps that were, you know, they'd last about 5 minutes. So we get down in this hole, and he crawls in first, and I crawl in. We're crawling head, face, head down, and look up, and here's a skeleton of an animal laying right there, just perfectly laying his face right at him. So my brother's face is right there, and we go, you know, like, oh my God, what is it? And we find out it's a badger. The whole skeleton of a badger had died in there. So we got past the badger and snuck around, and we kind of snuck around him, and it's only about this high, you know, maybe two or just barely, you couldn't stand up yet. But the thing seems to be getting bigger, as we go deeper down. Well, our headlamps were running out, so we had to leave that day. So, okay, we can't go any further without the headlamps. So we backed out, and we went and said, okay, let's get more batteries, and we'll come back tomorrow. So we came back the next day, and we closed it back up. Like, maybe we didn't want anybody else to find it, I guess. We closed it back up. Then we come back the next day, I pop it open, and we crawl down there, and we get down past the badger again, and then we start to, you know, look around. Okay, it's getting bigger. Okay, we turn our headlamps on, and okay, we had this crazy idea that, you know, if it seemed like the air, like it was getting harder, breathing deeper and deeper, we couldn't figure out, like there was no oxygen. But we had this crazy idea. I mean, we were about 22 years old, like, okay, let's go as far as we can, and instead of just crawling, let's run into the thing as far, so that we figure we can go further and deeper into this thing. So we get down a little ways. There's a passage where it splits off. It's getting taller and taller, and we say, okay, let's run as far as we can into it, and then when we run out of breath, then we'll start heading back. So basically we take off running down this thing, and it's getting bigger, and we're like, oh man, this is like, you know, now we can stand up. We start seeing old beams, and we just keep running, and suddenly we're just hyperventilating. We can't breathe at all. So we both look at each other and like, we better head back. So I run back as fast as I can. Remember, I think I told you, but we have a split in the tunnel. I get back to the split, and I can barely make sense of what I'm doing, and I remember to take a right turn back to the entrance. So I'm at make it to the entrance. I'm laying there just breathing at the entrance, just like, oh, God, I'm glad I made it. My brother is not behind me. He's like, so I get enough air, I go back, and just as I turn around and go back, he comes and he's laying down next to me, you know, saying, oh, God, we barely made it. You know, lucky we made it. Let's get out of here. We need to. So we basically had left, and we went back and we talked to the national parks, because this was in the thing, and we decided that we were, what was this? What were we in? Why did we find it? This isn't an area where there's normally caves. So we went back, and they said, well, talk to this old guy in Belfield, North Dakota, this old guy that's an old miner and knows the history of the area. And we went to him, and he showed us a picture of an old mine, an old coal mine. And basically the top caved in, and we crawled in the top, went down inside of it, and crawled all the way into this mine where it was open and there was coal. And he was telling us that if we would have lit a match, the whole mountain would have exploded. He said there was no air in there. It was virtually methane and other gases, and it would have exploded if we would have lit something. So the next day we went to the National Park Service, and they blocked it up, and it's been shut ever since, and no one knows where it's at. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Story Night is brought to you by presenting partners, the Boise State Story Initiative in the Cabin, venue partner, the Lennon Building, design partner, Neighborhood All-Stars, and our broadcast partner, Boise State Public Radio. Please donate now at radio.boisestate.edu. Our Story Night theme is by Dan Costello. Hear more at hearcostello.com. Please join us on the podcast next week for a teaser of our upcoming November 29th show, Living Without, Stories of Letting Go. Learn more at storystorynight.org.